There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
What phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
I take my hat off to anybody who's able to haul themselves out of bed at 3:45 a.m. to go to work. But that person is a 43-year-old sportsman who has to give himself 5.5 hours to get his body ready to complete one of the greatest comebacks in the history of sport. Well, I'd have to add a round of applause into my hat-doffing routine. Tiger Woods is back, ladies and gentlemen, Masters Champion 2019. And you are very welcome to Monday's Second Captain's Tiger Pod. Hi, Murph, or should I say, rawr?
No, you should not, Owen. That scared me.
Hi, Ken.
I'm sure, I mean, those of you cycling home, I hope you didn't fall off your bike.
How are you doing,
Owen? Terror at that.
Ah, well, I'm doing very well, Ken. This Tiger victory gives us plenty to talk about.
Sorry, that was one of the more surreal moments on this podcast. I'm sorry.
Why?
That was a little much for me.
It is one of the great joys of following golf, that you can begin rooting for a guy when they're in their early 20s and they can conceivably keep popping up in tournaments well into their 40s and beyond. You can kind of grow up with them, you know?
I was thinking this the other day, actually. I don't know when the thought struck me, I mean, because I don't think about golf very much, but I thought, I must have seen something about Tiger Woods or something. Like that. And I thought, why do they keep covering Tiger Woods as though he was like a relevant athlete? Really, like, it's as though, like, Tiger Woods is older than Ronaldo. Brazilian Ronaldo. He's of the same vintage. He's of the same generation. They were both dominating, the world dominating player in their sport in 1997, right?
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, it's as though, it's like Ronaldo and Zidane. The coverage is just, and there's always this kind of, oh, will Tiger make a comeback win? You know, and it seems to me just literally for all the dads, you know, it's like, here's something for the dads, where we can pretend this guy is still relevant. And I was kind of in this idle thought, like, why do they, like, it's so ridiculous the way they do this. And then obviously,
apparently not, Ken, yeah. This one's for the sons and daughters as well, not just the old folks.
Yeah, well, you know, Tom Watson came within a shot of winning the 2009 British Open when he was 59 years old. So You've got another 16 years of this with Tiger, so don't sweat it, Ken.
Tiger's also older than Ronaldo, apparently.
Yeah, he's December 1975. Ronaldo is, I'm going to say, September 1976.
Did you know already know that?
I'm going to guess it.
You've Googled. You've just Googled.
I haven't just
Googled. That is correct. September 1976. Yeah.
Nice work, Ken.
Many of us, like Ken here, had given up on Tiger Woods ever contending in the majors again, particularly when his back problems got ridiculously bad over the last few years. Certainly a Sunday charge at Augusta, keeping his composures as the others fell away, seemed like too much to ask. But we got it yesterday, and what scenes they were.
Many doubted we'd ever see it, but here it is. The return to glory.
Thank you.
tempted to say Tiger was so happy it was like he was a kid again. But when he was a kid, he often appeared to be devoid of emotion. He certainly wasn't whooping it up like Ric Flair as he was yesterday. Now, we got the emotional embrace with the family, but no breakdown in tears, despite the best efforts of Jim Nance in the butler's cabin. He may as well have replaced this question with the words, "Could you please cry for the public, Tiger?"
If you will, for just a moment, we had that replay sequence of your hug with your dad in 97, with your hug with your mom today, and Charlie and Sam. How much does it mean to you as a dad for your children to be able to experience this, to see their dad win a major championship?
Well, as I said, I'm at a loss for words. There is my dad. I mean, he shouldn't have been there that year. He was recovering from a heart attack and heart surgery. And now my little boy, Charlie, the embrace, it's just special. Just to have them here, you know, Sam actually lost a state soccer tournament yesterday. So I was kind of convinced her, want to come up and watch the Masters? And so they came up today, and luckily I was able to win.
One of the advantages of the final round being on during the afternoon this time is that you didn't have to worry about, I should probably get to bed as soon as this finishes. You can soak it all up. You can watch the butler's cabin while still fully awake. And
There is an element, I think, to be fair, of I have no excuse not to watch the butler's cabin thing, so I probably should now. Whereas most years it's like, just go to bed. The butler cabin thing is just going to weird you out.
Oh, no, I love getting weirded out by it. It's just such a strange event. My wife watched it.
We go now live to David Lynch's Twin Peaks, where Jim Nance is waiting to speak to the U.S. Masters champion.
I think it was the first time my wife had seen it. And I was thinking, how have I not dragged you into this? Oh, yeah, because normally,
it's not
if you're going to stay up until the end of the golf, you're probably gone before butler's cabin. But, so I think she's still rooted to the couch, stunned, to be honest. Honestly, the question is, what is this? Why are they talking like this?
What room is this? What time portal
have
they
stepped
through?
Who's that guy in the middle of it all? Who's the young guy? It's a confusing one for the newcomers. But is it the greatest comeback in sport? If that's the question, in true print newspaper style, I have asked you to compile a list of other great comebacks and place Tiger's achievement in there.
Oh, it's old sidebar Murphy here.
That's it.
Well, there's George Foreman, won a heavyweight title 20 years after the Rumble in the Jungle, after spending 10 years of that as a minister. That's a pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
That's a pretty good comeback. There's Muhammad Ali, of course.
That's the one that everyone's talking, yeah.
World champion for being banned.
You could argue that Ali got more done for the world at large during his absence than Tiger has, but continue.
Niki Lauda, almost burnt alive in a Formula One car, came back to win the Drivers' Championship the following year. That's a pretty good comeback. Ben Hogan survived a car crash that nearly killed him, went on to win 6 majors. That's a pretty good comeback.
Yeah, anything involving car crashes and nearly getting burnt alive is...
What about Bob Champion?
Hang on,
you're not doing the jockey. Not on the sidebar.
Well, I remember seeing the movie and
that's
a child
a good comeback.
And it made me cry.
But of all of those, I think really the big one, the one that I think trumps all of those and Tiger. Remember when Jordan Henderson turned down his ankle against Bayern Munich in the Champions League before returning to the Liverpool side for their match against Spurs just 2 weeks later?
That's
his revitalised form, winning Liverpool their 19th league championship. Not confirmed at time of recording. Still a pretty good comeback.
The way Jordan Henderson is being written up at the moment, Murph, I'm half taking you seriously. This is one that's being brought up.
But like...
What? You feel free to rubbish the Tiger comeback now if you want, Ken, because we're going to talk up the whole thing with
speak freely,
Malachi
Ken.
And Lawrence Donegan.
He's been playing these tournaments for years.
Yeah, but he had a back fusion surgery that was for quality of life purposes more so even than returning to golf. I mean, he's had to walk off the course like 4 or 5 times with back pain. This is like 3-4 years ago.
Oh, yeah, you know, even
maybe
more recently.
A couple
of years ago, yeah.
Not for me.
We can't seriously be comparing this to Muhammad Ali, surely.
Well, most people would say Ali is number one. But you got to compare it. You got to put it into the pantheon somewhere, surely.
Oh, I don't know. Like, I mean, it's just a guy randomly wins golf tournament, having participated in them for 10 years. Like,
well, he didn't participate in them for
10
months
years,
while he
10
was
years
re-
since he,
recovering
since
from
he was any good, right?
Man who has become so much bigger than his sport that many people couldn't name another competitor in that entire field if you asked them to pick him out of a lineup.
Good, drops down to
big fish in a small pond.
1,199th.
That's
the world.
Other thing. Big fish in an ever increasing pond with ever increasing quality of fish within that pond. Like, Tiger, in the time he's been off the top, if we get away from the fish metaphor for a second, has been Rory. Some of the previews of Rory at the Masters this year were saying, well, he's almost 30 now, so his time could almost be gone because you've got your Jordan Spieths and all that. And even they're getting on, but there's another bunch of lads coming through who are high quality as well. Like, the depth in golf actually is very strong at the moment. Yeah. So that's the other point. And there were, at one stage, there was an amazing part yesterday where Molinari dropped a couple of shots and suddenly everybody seemed like they were in contention. There were the top 10 were all within two shots of the lead. Mm. Dustin Johnson hadn't seen him all day. Dustin Johnson, one of the most famous golfers in the world, had not seen him all day. He pops up out of nowhere. Oh, he's only one off. Oh, now he's tied for the lead. So there were all these other very big names and different characters in the hunt for this, and it was Tiger who managed to outlast them all. So impressed Ken, has impressed most people. Sorry, Ken.
How did old Alligator Arms Kushar get on?
He was actually in contention. Would you believe, Ken, actually, this is going to... I hope you're good. You're sitting down.
Yeah.
The Augusta National patrons, not fans, the Augusta National patrons somehow found it in their hearts to forgive Matt Kuchar for stiffing a Mexican caddy out of 125 grand. This is how much they respect the game of golf, that they were able to put aside, I'm sure, all of their own personal disgust at how Matt Kuchar treated that Mexican caddy. They somehow said, listen, we're appalled, Matt, but quite, you know, we...
You're a golf man.
You deserve another chat.
Lots of Tiger chat to come after I remind our World Service members about our book club news.
And who wrote it?
I can't remember his name.
I'll tell you who wrote it.
Episode 3 of the I'll Tell You Wrote It Second Captain's Book Club happens later this month. The all-time classic sports book up for review is Joe DiMaggio, The Hero's Life by Richard Ben Kramer, a stunning portrayal of the iconic American sportsman known as Jolting Joe DiMaggio. And our reviewer this month is none other than Jolting Joe DiBroglio. Yes, Joe Brody will be reading and discussing this incredible life story. For World Service members, I told you about this last Thursday. O'Mahony's booksellers in Limerick have ordered copies in, especially at a 10% discount.
DiBroglio.
Discount code revealed last Thursday on the show. Same as it has been for the other books we've done, in case you missed that one. As for the rest of you, if you want to hear shows like this, you should become a member today. It only costs a fiver a month plus VAT, and you can do it on secondcaptains.com.
Owen's going to call him Jolting Joe DiBroglio to his face.
So. B-R-O-G-L-I-O.
As in Imbroglio.
Yeah, DiBroglio.
Yeah, that's good. Broglio. I like it.
I should say the book is a little bit more than a fiver, but it's a good competitive price with our friends at O'Mahony's. But to join up with the World Service, it's a fiver a month plus VAT, and you can have a look on secondcaptains.com. On the World Service this week, a lot of Champions League coverage, and we could be discussing the end of John Delaney at the FAI. Lots of stories over the weekend that he is on the brink. We'll give you the latest on that before we wrap this podcast. But Malachy Clerken is here. Malachy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Yeah, Lawrence Donegan, how are you?
How you doing there, mate?
Now that we've all established that we're all doing okay, let's talk about what we all came here to talk about. We've already indulged in the futile exercise of ranking this in the list of all-time great sports comebacks. What I want to ask you, Malachy, is where does it rank in Tiger's own body of work? Is it his greatest major?
Is it his greatest comeback?
Essentially, yeah, yeah. Is it Tiger's greatest comeback?
Greatest major? I wouldn't say that at all, actually. I don't know if I'd even, if you want to break it down in very sort of technical golf terms.
Well, see, it's not that. See, you
well, he's definitely not going to win it. Yesterday isn't going to win that.
But no, it is interesting. You've gone straight to technical golf terms. But if you were to take it in its totality, the comeback element, the emotion, the story.
Actually, it's the best story.
But nowhere near the best.
Yeah. But like, I was thinking about it a little bit last night. It was a very it was a very kind of a major, the way Jack Nicklaus always talked about winning majors, that you sort of hang around on a Sunday and let everybody else make the mistakes. Like, if you take away the magic of the story, Jesus, the rest of them fairly handed it to him.
Well, particularly in the 12th, when they're obviously out in threes.
Yeah.
And five of the six, the two leading groups all dunked it in the water on the 12th hole, for Tiger.
And I mean, I don't know what sort of golf historians these guys are, but I think they've probably seen the 12th at Augusta before. And even if you take Molinari's shot there, I know... I read a little bit afterwards going, he was at a big disadvantage going first there in the 12th because you never know what the wind can do. Aye, fine. But, he did not need to be going straight at the pin. He needed to be going straight over the bunker, middle of the green, give yourself 15 footer. If it goes in, it goes in. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But my God, don't make a five. That's the wrong bloody time to be making a five. And I was just, you know, Koepka did it, Tony Finau did it. Like the amount of players who, even Koepka coming down the last two holes, he gave himself a birdie putt in both holes. One of those go in. And suddenly Tiger really has to make a five on the last, or really has to make a four on the last. As it is, he goes to the last with a two-shot lead and, you know, gives himself the leeway to chip a second shot up there and get try and get up and down. But even then, he had two putts for it. So yeah, sorry. That's sort of a roundabout way of going and saying, like, they really did sort of... not make it easy for him, but they did everything that he would have wanted them to do.
Lawrence, how did you react when Tiger hit that tee shot on the 16th to within a few feet, which essentially was the tournament winning shot? Were you up off your couch?
Absolutely, but before I think to touch on Malky's point about technical, I thought Tiger's swing plane when he won the 2005 US Open was awesome, Malky, don't you think?
Yeah, that's the kind
of... That's what everyone...
Let's really get them in here, that's what Lawrence. Everyone wants that's where people come to the second captain.
Lawrence Donegan clickbait.
No, yeah, absolutely. That was, you know, cometh the hour and all that kind of stuff. But Malaghi does make a good point. You know, everybody else performed their part in this great Shakespearean drama. And, of course, the man himself. I mean, that's actually not a bad... It's not a difficult shot. I mean, they're all difficult, obviously. And, you know, coming down the, you know, coming down the stretch in a Masters, trying to win it. But that's not a... That, you know, that pin is there traditionally for a reason, you know, because the ball feeds down there. And, yeah, I mean, he hit the shot when he needed to. But yes, you know, it was a fantastic shot. And the thing about Malky, again, I'm just repeating what Malky said. It was a very Nicklaus-like performance. You know, he hung around. He hit. You know, he didn't do anything spectacular. I mean, that was a great shot. But you know, there was nothing. But it was just so solid. And you know, Molinari stuck it in the water at 12. Well, I mean, if you're going to win a Masters, I mean, you don't do stuff like that. You know, you've got to have the talent. You've got to have the nerve not to do that. And Tiger, I mean, he's been there before. He had the experience. You know, it really, really showed, I thought, you know, how much more experienced he was in a circumstance like that.
Yeah. Murph, sorry, go on, yeah.
Yeah, he two-putted the 12th, two-putted the 13th, two-putted the 15th, and that was enough to win the Masters.
Well, don't forget about the ninth as well. I think that's possibly my favourite shot of the round was
the putt downhill.
Yeah, ridiculous putt. You're looking at it going, this is... You take yourself away from it for a second and you're like, this is just a ridiculous feat to be able to get a ball to within a foot or so of a hole from that distance over a couple of ridges where if you don't get over one, you're coming back. You're getting it... Like it has to be perfection just to get it to where he got
like,
it.
Like, and in fairness, it was fantastic. I wonder what you think about this, Lawrence. That putt to me told me a little bit. I thought the greens were a little bit slower than the usual Masters kamikaze greens that we're used to, because he and I think Poulter and Koepka in the group before had a sort of similar putt like that they had to lag down. And all three got it within a foot. And I'm just thinking, in other years, I've seen that putt off the green.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, part of it was the weather. But, I mean, just to get slightly technical, you know, they can have those green speeds at anything they want. I mean, they have these incredible sub-air systems. So they can have them at 16 on the stimp or they can have them at 10. And the criminology of the green jackets, you know, you have to wonder. I don't know why. I mean, why did they have they did turn down the green speeds a little bit? Maybe it was to, you know, to get a packed leaderboard to kind of even things out. I don't know. But that was brilliant. But part of it as well, you know, when you're coming down the back nine at a major championship, your mind is completely scrambled. And part of the, you know, what separates a winner, who's the guy that can unscramble his mind? You know, who's the guy that can hold it together? Who's the guy that knows that, you know, I just need seven pars and a couple of birdies here and I've done it. You know, and again, it comes back to Tiger, and a lot of these guys just didn't. You
well,
know,
cause, yeah,
probably, the I was going to say, his presence probably... help scramble their minds.
Yeah,
I mean,
and
who knows?
And the fact, like, exactly the prime example of that is like is Patrick Cantlay, who is absolutely tearing Augusta to bits for 18 holes on Saturday and 15 holes on Sunday, absolutely tearing through it. Then stands on the 16th green or since 16th tee on Sunday. And realizes, shit, I'm leading the Masters. And as Lawrence says, you know, the 16th on Sunday is set up for you to hit it to the middle of the green and let the ball roll down to the hole. He barely hits the right side of the green. Like, it would have been a bad shot on Saturday to the Saturday pin. And clearly just the enormity of shit. And like, he was the best player in the world on that course for what's 15 and 18, 33 holes. And then he shot himself. There's no two ways around it, you know?
I mean, it is hard to leave it up on that shelf.
Yeah.
It definitely is on 16. But again, it's all part of it, isn't it? This is why it's just, golf is so brilliant. You know, major championships are so brilliant because it tests every single facet. It rings you out, you know, physically, technically, but most of all mentally. You know, as you say, standard, can you imagine this kid? I mean, he's a great player. He was number one amateur in the world for a while. Really good players, come through a lot in his personal life. And you know, I mean, he must have just, as you said, he must have just dropped it. I mean, just, I felt so bad for him, but there you go, it's all part of it.
Yeah, I don't know if Patrick Cantlay had won, would there be a wordless Sports Illustrated cover, which there is at the moment. Apparently this is a huge deal in the US.
Oh, quiz.
Yeah, it's just a picture of Tiger in his red with the Sports Illustrated in red and arms aloft. And it's also, but you know, you walk into the shop across the road there half an hour ago, it's front page on every newspaper. And sometimes you're wrapped up in the sports bubble and you think, this is massive. What? And then nobody who doesn't like sport gives
it's
a damn
funny.
About it.
It's funny, I was saying this to somebody earlier that I reacted with complete shock. I turned after I watched Line of Duty last night. No spoilers. I left BBC One on, and it was top of the BBC news on a Sunday night. Like, I know Sunday nights newsrooms are kind of empty and all that, but I that kind of jolted me a little out of the sports bubble.
And it was probably the timing as well, because it was on for us in the afternoon. We got a chance to get excited about it by Sunday, and then by Monday everyone has the opportunity to put it out in the papers and all that kind of stuff. How did you find watching it in the afternoon, by the way?
Well, you know, a little bit discombobulating. It didn't really fit with my parenting schedule for the weekend. So they need to sort that out, or I need to sort that out for next year. And B, I was just saying to Murph outside, I can say with total authority that Molinari's ball went in the water at the exact second that Mo Salah's shot hit the top corner of the net, because my golf Twitter and football Twitter, the streams crossed, and as Molinari's ball went in the water, Richie Sadlier went, holy fuck, and I went, Jesus, Richie watching the golf, and then it turns out that is not
probably
Malachi, exact same with me. I saw the same, saw Richie was thinking the same thing, but realised what was going on here. What about the enormity of this as a sporting event and otherwise, Lawrence? It's I mean, you're only about to go out in your business there in California, so I don't know if you've got a sense of it yet, but is it a big deal?
I'm sitting there watching. My phone is blowing up texting when it's you know, unveiling itself. I mean, from people who have never spoke to me, they know I'm a golf writer and golf journalist, keen on golf, blowing up, people who would never dream of texting me on the subject. It's huge in the United States, absolutely. I don't know what it is about this guy. He just has this grip on the consciousness. And a lot of it is about, a lot of places are running this people writing Tiger off. You know, there's a lot of that kicking around and then going, ha, 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 you said this and look at you now. You're looking a bit stupid now. There's a touch to that about it. But he just had for a long, long time, he has just had this grip on, you know, the consciousness of Americans, and not just people who are interested in sport. He does. I mean, it's an old cliche, but he transcends into the cultural space as well. It's I mean, it's great. And also, they're kind of smaltzy over here, aren't they? And all the kind of, and that was great. You know, the whole kind of family scene behind the 18th, that's really got a lot of people as well. And I mean, America, I don't think Americans are exclusively, exclusive in their love of a redemption story. So there's all these intertwining themes, and it all adds up to this one great, huge, you know, media cultural bubble. They're absolutely, the whole place is gripped. It'll probably be that case for a week, because the Masters generally does have a kind of impact regardless who wins it, because the guy who wins it in the States, he always goes on the kind of late night talk shows for the week, you know, that week after, he used to be on a Letterman show. It's now what's his face, Colbert, all that kind of stuff. But this is as big as it gets over here, really.
Yeah, Lawrence. I mean, F. Scott Fitzgerald once wrote that there are no second acts in American life. But I mean, did Tiger's post-water hydrant life need another major? Like, you can talk about he was finished 2013 as world number one. He's won a couple of PGA titles since then, PGA Tour titles since then. But none of that really mattered in the way that adding another major matters.
No, it just doesn't, does it? It's I mean, the guy, it's just like an epic scale of the whole life story, isn't it? The whole narrative. I, you know, and no matter what happens after this, and God knows quite a lot could happen after this, you watch a movie, okay, and it goes on for 2 hours, and then there's the final redemption, and here we are, we've arrived at it. You know, I think if he wins, obviously if he wins 19, that 19 is going to be a huge one. But, if 16, 17, they won't be as big as this because of what has gone over or what's gone on since 2008. And you got to remember, I mean, we talk about the scandal, but I think 18, 19 months ago, he's on the side of a road in Florida, arrested at 3 a.m. in the morning. I mean, that's a hell of a comeback. He's at the Masters Champions dinner whispering to Faldo, "I'm done." You know, so for all the people who are getting slagged off this morning for writing him off, I mean, Tiger Woods wrote himself off. And as I say, here we are now. It's just the epic scale of it. And this is, I mean, it doesn't get any more epic than, what happened yesterday afternoon. It would have been, if the actual golf, if the competition had been a bit stronger, it would have been even more epic. But I mean, epic's enough for me.
Should we just be universally applauding this man and this achievement? I mean, if you or I ended up at the side of the road being arrested for a DUI after taking this cocktail of prescription drugs, do you want to feel that one for the time being, Lawrence? Whereas with sports people or maybe celebrities of the magnitude of Tiger Woods, it's like we see that as a positive nearly in his story. It's like, oh, he came back from this terrible incident that he got himself into, whereas the rest of us would expect to be judged a bit more harshly by our peers.
Well, a couple of things about that. You know, when he was arrested with all the drugs in his system, I think two of the drugs in his system were actually banned, are banned in golf. But that was kind of brushed over. So we'll leave that to one side. But I think anybody in life, surely, if they come back, if they make the most of themselves after a real bad fall, I mean, don't we all applaud that? I mean, I think Tiger Woods certainly deserves the applause that anybody else would get. And to do it in such a public forum, I think is pretty special. That, again, you know, he did fall, and you kind of got to say he's kind of served his time, quotes unquote. So I think he deserved, he's getting a lot of praise, and I think he deserves it.
I remember we did the sports book review last Christmas.
And I was thinking that today.
Tiger's book was
in.
One of them.
Yeah, we were chatting about that.
And we were thinking, I remember reading it at a time when, I can't remember what the tournament was last year, maybe the Players or whatever, and he was in the hunt on Sunday night. And I remember I was sitting on the couch reading this book and then looking up at the TV and reading the book going, man, this guy was such an asshole. And then looking up and going, go on, Tiger, go on. And so there's a tension there. And like, I definitely felt it yesterday, you know. I was definitely watching it. And like, I must say, I've been to a lot of sports events. I've covered a lot of sports events. I haven't had envy for other journalists in a long time like I had yesterday. Imagine being there and writing that. Imagine sitting down and like being helped out with the early finish, so you have a few hours to sit down with a blank screen and try and put words on that. Like, amazing.
I was going to say, Malachy, the few hours doesn't help. I think it's just best to knock it out in 45 minutes. That's when you usually do your best work.
But one way or another, I mean, imagine, I would have loved to have tried, had a go at that yesterday. Like, but that tension was totally there. As a sports story, it's amazing. As a human story, it's amazing too. But like, you're still kind of going, oh, God, he's when you think back to all the things he did, he is a tough, tough guy to root for, you know?
But the ambivalence kind of adds to it all, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Don't you think? I mean, I'm not especially a Tiger Woods fan. You know, I have some issues with, the way he's conducted himself on the golf course over the years. I won't, again, we're not really going, it's not the forum. But yeah, but again, it's all part of it. He's such a kind of complicated, multi-layered character. And that just, I mean, it adds to it all. You know, and you love him, you hate him.
And funny
he's
enough,
brilliant, he's terrible.
Yeah, funny enough, I actually was thinking back to a time when I know I was there, and I think you were there too, the year when he came back from the scandal, and the start of the week was Billy Payne and his horrendous our hero has made, or what was it? It was like our hero has made a big disgrace of his life, yeah, but we're ready to welcome him back here.
Billy Payne,
like
the chairman of Augusta, yeah, was the moral arbiter for American society, obviously.
And it did occur to me also, yesterday. It did occur to me yesterday. I'm delighted that Tiger came back here and won here. You know.
Yeah, well, Billy Payne, remember, who was the CEO of the most corrupt Olympics in history, Atlanta 1996. So, yeah. But the unctuous, remember that Malky, sorry, this is Malky and Lawrence go down memory lane, yeah, but the unctuousness of Tiger that week trying to be pals with all the journalists.
It was so awful. Yeah.
Anyway, but again, it all adds to, I mean, he's such a compelling character, you know, and I mean, complicated characters are much more compelling than straightforward nice guys, don't you think? I think it's the case, and I think that's part of his appeal.
Yeah, Lawrence, I know you have to get on there, so I do just want to ask you what you see in the future for Tiger Woods. More majors? Will he catch Jack Nicklaus, etc.?
I doubt he'll catch Jack Nicklaus. I mean, he's got to win another. Well, he's got three to catch. I mean, that's Ernie Els's career, isn't it? Has he only got three or four majors? Mm. I doubt that. I think the competition's too strong. I think people like Kepka and Johnson, and they've seen it now. You know what was struck me yesterday, and it was a bit odd, and I could never imagine Tiger doing it, was just the delight in other players winning they'd won a major championship. You know, these guys need to learn that they can revere him in certain ways, but this reverence on a, you know, in a back nine on a Sunday afternoon, that's enough. And I think they will have learned from that, and I still think the gap in talent between Tiger and the rest of them is non-existent. You know, when Tiger was in his pomp, you know, there was a huge gap between Tiger and the guys he was competing against. But now the talent level is very even. And I wouldn't put Tiger at the top of the talent tree. And I would hope that, you know, these guys will learn from their experience yesterday afternoon. So to win three or to win four, I don't think so, really.
Lawrence, thank you so much.
All the best, mate.
I'm going to keep you here a little while longer, if you don't mind.
Awesome. Maybe,
just to continue talking to Tiger. And I also have that quote in front of me here at the what's his name, Billy Payne quote. It is simply not the degree of his conduct that is so egregious here. It is the fact that he disappointed all of us, and more importantly, our kids and our grandkids. Our hero did not live up to the expectations of the role model we saw for our children. I love the fact that it's an ESPN article I'm reading, and the next sentence in the article is, they were the strongest words from a Masters chairman since Hootie Johnson's famous point of a bayonet reply to Martha Burke in 2002 when he defended the club's right to an all-male membership.
Really,
so he must have said, like, we'll have a female members at the point of a bayonet.
Man, it really is.
These are the people.
It really is an awful place, Augusta. Yeah. Like, it really, really is a terribly horrible group, but my God, they have a golf course.
They have a golf course, and they have a tournament that works all right on a lot of levels. This idea of, okay, well, I don't want to stay on Tiger's personality, but part of this whole redemption story is that he has changed. You know, he is this warm, cuddly Tiger. But do you think so? Like, Harrington was on BBC yesterday, Potter Harrington, saying this cuddly Tiger thing is a nonsense once he's out on course. Yeah, you know, you saw him out there today, he wasn't smiling. In fact, he as Harrington said, he intimidated Molinari off the course, he felt. May have just been Molinari, but, you know, just Tiger being there. So has his sort of image been successfully recalibrated in recent years, or is that actually why people want to see him? Do they really care about his personality? Is there something else about Tiger?
Well, there's a couple of things. It could be a little bit. As Lawrence was saying there, it was very noticeable afterwards. You saw your Ricky Fowler, you saw your Justin Thomas, you saw all these guys standing ready to clap him in. And, you know, he has definitely, has a relationship with those guys, say through the Ryder Cup, through wherever it is they live in Florida, that he did not have in 2005 with anybody, literally anybody outside sort of his college friend Nota Begay. Like, those relationships do seem to be there, however surface they are. You know, it does seem to be an actual thing. So maybe that has sort of radiated out into the general public, and they go, well, Tiger is so much nicer now, blah, blah, blah. I don't think that's it, though. I think that if you ask around in America, or if you sort of follow golf in America at all, the American sports public knows about five golfers. They know Tiger Woods and, man, if they could name...
I'd say one golfer in most cases.
Yeah, exactly. The sports public, they don't really care. Like, they care about Tiger, and golf doesn't matter beyond him, you know? Like, his picture is in the front of all five New York newspapers this morning. That doesn't happen if it's anybody else. Literally anybody else. So all they care about really is the fact that he's a winner, that he is this transcendent sports figure. I was thinking about this morning. One of my favorite collections of sports articles is a book that the Sunday Times, it's a big hardback book that the Sunday Times put out in 1999, and it was the 50 best sports stories of the century. And it was a weekly feature, two-page spread in the Sunday Times sports section every week through 1999. And it was the 50 best stories, not the 50 most important things or the 50 biggest sports events or whatever, the 50 best stories of the century. And I was I often think about it like when something big is happening now, like when that book or whatever, books won't exist obviously in 2099, but whatever does exist, whenever the collection of the 50 biggest sports stories of this century happens, what will be there? Does anything that happens now get into it? I really think yesterday gets into it. Or if it doesn't, then whenever he gets to 19, gets into it. But I really think as a sports story, it's beyond almost anything else. That is certainly beyond anything else that has happened in golf since... Well,
Tiger's first.
Since Tiger's first, or I mean since the meltdown, since 09. It is one of the sports stories of the decade. It really, really is because it was so unlikely, because he had four back surgeries, because not even the four back surgeries, because he is and was at one time the most famous sportsman on the planet, you know, that he holds this weight. Like, I'd say you all saw the picture of him on the 16th tee waiting on the ball to roll down the hill.
With Michael Phelps.
Michael Bleeding Phelps standing behind him. Yeah. You know, that's...
Looking like a kid at his first golf tournament. I mean, Tiger.
Talk about game recognised game, you know. But again, nobody else. Is there another sports person alive that gets that, you know? And that I think that's what it is. It's more the transcendent nature of him as a sportsman than anything to do, I think, with his personality. I think that's maybe a mile wide and an inch deep. I don't think anybody really cares about that at the back of it all.
We've used that word has come a few times, the fact that he's transcended his sport. But in some ways, particularly in recent years, he's actively tried not to transcend it, because he's had the opportunity to join these other black sports people and speak up on all that.
Sure.
And he's just kept doing his Tiger thing, and nobody seems to judge him harshly for it. He set out his stall a long time ago, and
it is a real black mark against him, you know, for plenty of people, including me. You know, like no black athlete in a long time has had the power that he has had within his sport. You know, obviously LeBron has a huge amount of power, but he's within a predominantly black sport. This is in a white sport. And he could have done so much. He could have changed so many minds, so much thinking, and chose not to, you know, chose to be great at what he was great at. And that was his determination, and you know, of course, everybody has their own right to do whatever see the world whatever way they see it. But that'll always be a black mark against them.
Lawrence seemed to rubbish the idea of him catching Jack Nicklaus, but he's only got three to go.
Yeah, but as he said, like three is a career.
It's Porrie Carrington's career.
Three is Porrie Carrington's career. Three is look at the same time, you know. The US Open's at Pebble Beach this year. Like he won in Pebble Beach by 15 shots in 2000, or 12 shots. 12 shots and 15 is
the British Open,
you know,
Portrush.
British Open, you know, I mean, like, in fairness, Tiger's going to be here in a few months going to Portrush. Like, that is very cool. That is very,
I'm going
very
to day
cool.
one. I'm going to the opening day, man.
Awesome. Like, yeah. And so, look, I wouldn't, I think Lawrence is exactly right. Like, when he was reeling off majors, he was so much better than everybody else. Golf is a game where it's very hard to be that much better than everybody else, and he just isn't now, you know, and they won't always hand it to him like they did. I could see him winning another Masters, I think three more is a stretch. Three more to equal and four more to beat him is a stretch. But mind you, I 100% thought he wouldn't win one more.
And he is also 100%. Oh, you didn't give him a chance.
No chance. I thought there was no chance of a memory.
Well, I mean, he couldn't walk 18 months ago.
He couldn't walk. And even when you think, right, 18 months ago, 9 months ago or whenever it was, he went to the PGA Tour and said, here, I'll be President's Cup captain next year. He is President's Cup captain this year. Like, no way does a Tiger Woods who thinks that he's top, give a shit about almost playing in it, but certainly not being the captain of it. So he's the captain of that team, like, later this year. Now, maybe he'll change that. Maybe he'll decide to push it back. But that's where his head was 9 months ago.
And forget about 9 months ago. 24 hours ago, as I mentioned at the top of the show, he had to get up at 3:45 a.m. to get himself ready for what?
Yeah, are we buying that?
Oh, well, I bought it. I opened the show with it. Why should I not have bought it?
I don't know. There. It goes back
certainly
to that.
How I would have answered if I was Tiger Woods.
It goes a little bit back to all those stories in that Armin Katayan book of him. You know, he wanted to be a pro athlete above everything, and, you know, he was always going on about how hurt he was and all this sort of stuff. I don't know if he was up at 3:45. It's his day. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
Well,
but
thank
you for
informing me of this now, Matthew, rather than an hour ago. Do we have the stomach for one Rory McIlroy question before we go?
Sure.
What did you make of Rory McIlroy? There's your Rory
McIlroy remember question. when we were in here talking about him, was it a couple of weeks ago? We were talking about Rory one time with Lawrence, maybe a few weeks ago. Yeah. And we were talking about his new Zen.
Yes.
His new, and I was going, well, you know, yep. I'm all for it. I'm all for this. But let's see when he's just hit 39 on the outward nine in Augusta. There was a bit of shoulder slumping over the weekend, wasn't there? There was a little bit of, oh, come on. And he had reined it in. By the time he did his post-match interviews, he was all, you know, just didn't play as well this week as I'd like to. You know, there'll be other days. And so, but I thought there was still a wee bit of, the Kevin the Teenager about him. So it's not all gone, which I'm a little bit glad about. I kind of hated the idea of Zen Rory McIlroy. I don't know, be yourself and win as yourself. Look, he made too many mistakes. He was brilliant in certain things. He had a load of eagles, a load of birdies, but he just, you know, he played himself out of it long before the rest of the field played.
Well, look, we've been asking for it for years. It's never really come close to happening, but I think Rory versus Tiger down the stretch on a Sunday of a major, it's got to be Portrush.
It's got to be in Portrush.
Set up perfectly.
Imagine, yeah.
God, and then that would be a pretty fun. I mean, you know, the Sunday of a British Open is a, it's kind of a weird one because I'm usually watching a GA game.
Well, I was just going to say, as somebody who's going to be stuck in bloody Portlaoise or Tullamore that Sunday, I want that round rained off.
This round three qualifier would report on itself.
No. Play it, rain it off and play it on the Monday. I'll be all about it.
Thanks, Maliki.
Cheers.
I'm having a buzz floundering around. Anyone want to not give me a shell?
6 million ways to die. Choose one.
I don't like the name because, you know, I actually think he's a very good writer. But it was that. This was a dig at football people who know the game, using statistics to try and undermine people who have eyes, ears and common sense.
What I'm saying is that sometimes the eyes and ears mislead you. The ears, particularly if it's Paul Merson talking to him, might mislead you.
This was a dig at football people who know the game.
You know, the balls, you know, the stones.
Have a proper debate. I'd love to debate him. You could sell tickets for that.
All I have to back it up are facts. All I have to back it up is the factual record of what took place.
Bring it on. This was a dig at football people who know the game. He's the one who's on the attack, don't forget. And has been for some time without naming people. He mentioned pundits. Well, who are the football pundits?
I think they call that, Owen, a verbal broadside. You've been on the attack, Ken, but you don't have... You just don't have what it takes to name names.
You don't have the balls, Ken. You have the stones.
Don't have the balls.
Yeah, I don't want to put them down. But they seem to want to prove that you don't need to know anything about football to write about it. This was a dig at football people who know the game.
You don't have the balls, Ken. You have the stones.
All right, Ken, when we recorded our football podcast today, we did throw in the little rider in there that there could be some breaking news this afternoon, which would be covered in our second podcast of the day. And the breaking news is there is no breaking news. But what's the very latest with the John Delaney situation?
Well, you said
FAI?
There's no breaking news.
Well, he's still there.
I'm getting a lot of people telling me that that phenomenon whereby you hear something for the first time and then suddenly kind of coincidentally keep hearing it.
Yes.
It's called the Bader-Meinhof effect. Mm. It's been Bader-Meinhof this, Bader-Meinhof that all afternoon in my mentions.
Why is it called the Bader-Meinhof syndrome? Is that, are we calling it a syndrome?
I think because somebody experienced it regarding the Bader-Meinhof gang and then named the thing that, like if you discover a species of lizard and name it, Chironus Saurus,
Murphius
Saurus
Maximus.
Murphius,
yeah, okay,
or whatever. Yeah. anyway, there was an FAI statement.
If anyone wants to name a lizard after me, that's my preferred name. Just by the way, okay. Sorry. Just
FAI
sorry,
statement. Let's go.
2:44 p.m. Owen's just like, shh.
Says the man who began the show by roaring at me like a tiger. But anyway, listen, I'm not going to take lessons from this guy.
FAI press release. What's this going to be? FAI launches updated child welfare and safeguarding policy. Various international managers and head coaches supported the launch. Republic of Ireland manager Mick McCarthy, assistant coaches Terry Connor, Robbie Keane, under 21 manager Stephen Kenny, numerous international head coaches were in attendance to support the launch. Speaking at the event, FAI President Donald Conway spoke about the importance of the updated policy document. I'm a father and grandfather, and children bring so much added value to our daily lives. Nobody can argue that every child enriches our lives, stated Donald Conway, et cetera, et cetera. So that's good to hear that this is all going on at the FAI, but no news yet on the other issue, the one in which John Delaney is, supposed to be on his way out of there. We haven't got any confirmation yet of this.
We will follow during the week. Fear not. Thanks very much, Ken.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you, Ken.
Thanks, everybody.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home. They never go home. They never go home, those boys.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.